وقال نسوة في المدينة امرأة العزيز تراود فتاها عن نفسه قد شغفها حبا إنا لنراها في ضلال مبين.
And some ladies in the city began to say, the chief's wife, violently in love with her houseboy, is out to tempt him. We think she is totally mistaken.
فَلَمَّا سَمِعَتْ بِمَكْرِهِنَّ أَرْسَلَتْ إِلَيْهِنَّ وَأَعْتَدَتْ لَهُنَّ مُتَّكَأً وَآتَتْ كُلَّ وَاحِدَةٍ مِّنْهُنَّ سِكِّينًا وَقَالَتْ اخْرُجْ عَلَيْهِنَّ فَلَمَّا رَأَيْنَهُ أَكْبَرْنَهُ وَقَطَّعْنَ أَيْدِيَهُنَّ وَقُلْنَ حَاشَ لِلَّهِ مَا هَذَا بَشَرًا إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا مَلَكٌ كَرِيمٌ.
Hearing of their sly talk, the chief's wife sent for those ladies and arranged for them a banquet and got ready couches and gave each guest a knife. Then while they were cutting and eating the fruit, she signaled Joseph, peace be upon him, come out to them. When the ladies saw him, they were so struck with admiration that they cut their hands, exclaiming, Allah preserve us. This is no mortal human. This is nothing but a noble angel. Hearing of their sly talk, the chief's wife sent for those ladies and arranged for them a banquet and got ready couches. This refers to the banquet where the guests were lying on couches. Egyptian archaeological monuments also bear out that in such parties, couches were used. The Bible makes no mention of this banquet. However, the Talmud mentions it, though its account differs significantly from that in the Quran. The Talmudic narrative is totally bereft of the vividness, the underlying spirit, the naturalness, and the moral tenor of the Quranic narrative.
قالت فذلكن الذي لمتنني فيه ولقد راودته عن نفسه فاستعصم ولئن لم يفعل ما آمره ليسجنن وليكونا من الصاغرين.
She said, so now you see, this is the one regarding whom you reproached me. Indeed, I tried to tempt him to myself, but he held back. And if he does not follow my order, he will certainly be imprisoned and humiliated. Indeed, I tried to tempt him to myself, but he held back. And if he does not follow my order, he will certainly be imprisoned and humiliated. This gives some idea of the moral degeneration of the upper classes of Egyptian society. Obviously, the guests invited to the banquet of the official's wife would have been upper-class ladies. Now the official's wife presented before them the attractive young man with whom she was passionately in love. By so doing, she tried to make the ladies realize why she could not help falling madly in love with such a handsome youth. It is significant that those ladies fully agreed that the young man was overwhelmingly attractive and that it was quite understandable why any woman would have had such a crush on him. It is significant that the hostess felt no reluctance in brazenly declaring that if Joseph, peace be upon him, did not respond to her amorous advances, she would have him cast into prison and suffer humiliation. All this goes to show that there is nothing so new about the promiscuity which characterizes the social life of Europe and America today. Centuries ago, more or less the same situation obtained in Egypt as it obtains in our enlightened times.
قال رب السجن أحب إلي مما يدعونني إليه وَإِلَّا تَصْرِفْ عَنِّي كَيْدَهُنَّ أَصْبُ إِلَيْهِنَّ وَأَكُمْ مِنَ الْجَاهِلِينَ.
Joseph, peace be upon him, said, My Lord, I prefer imprisonment to what they ask me to do, And if you do not avert from me the guile of these women, I will succumb to their attraction and lapse into ignorance. And if you do not avert from me the guile of these women, I will succumb to their attraction and lapse into ignorance. These verses recapture the situation in which Joseph, peace be upon him, found himself. He appears as a handsome young man, about 19 or 20 years old, having come to Egypt after spending the early part of his life in a Bedouin milieu. Joseph, peace be upon him, was physically attractive and appeared to be full of youth and vigor. After having passed through the adversities of poverty, banishment, and forced slavery, by a quirk of fate, Joseph, peace be upon him, came to the house of a highly influential person, a representative of the most civilized empire of the world in those days. In this new environment, Joseph first encounters the amorous advances of the lady of the house. As the news of his comeliness spread through the capital, upper-class ladies of the town also fell for him. All alone, Joseph, peace be upon him, vigilantly resists temptation at almost every step. Every possible effort is made to arouse his passions and to destroy the foundations of his righteous character. Wherever he goes, he encounters temptation and seduction in their most alluring forms. At the slightest show of inclination on Joseph's part, those ladies were willing to do all that lay in their power to pander to his lust. Joseph, peace be upon him, faced this difficult situation all day and all night. Were he to suffer a momentary lapse, he would have entered any of his innumerable portals of sin that stood ajar, waiting to receive him. Placed in such a situation, this God-fearing youth overcomes all satanic temptations with astounding success. What is all the more amazing is that despite such exceptional restraint, such remarkable resistance to temptation, there is no trace of pride in Joseph. He never boasts that by dint of his righteousness, he was able to overcome the temptations which faced him. He never displays any feeling of self-adulation. He never brags at remaining firm in the face of the temptation. On the contrary, Joseph, peace be upon him, is highly conscious of his human susceptibility. He admits the prey to any temptation. He humbly implores God, therefore, to help him and to rescue him from those temptations. This was, in fact, the most sensitive stage in Joseph's training. The qualities of honesty, trustworthiness, chastity, truthfulness, fairness, self-discipline, moderation, and mental poise and balance which lay dormant in his personality were all fully mobilized. Joseph, peace be upon him, himself was unaware of those qualities. However, when he was put to the test, they all came to the fore. Joseph, peace be upon him, thus became aware of the qualities he possessed and began to know to what use he could put them.
فَاسْتَجَابَ لَهُ رَبُّهُ فَصَرَفَ عَنْهُ كَيْدَهُمْ إِنَّهُ هُوَ السَّمِيعُ الْعَلِيمُ
Thereupon, his Lord granted his prayer and averted their guile from him. Surely, he alone is all-hearing, all-knowing. Thereupon, his Lord granted his prayer and averted their guile from him. Averting the guile of these women refers to God's investing Joseph, peace be upon him, with a firm character which enabled him to frustrate their guile. This also means that it is because of divine providence that Joseph, peace be upon him, suffered imprisonment. This, as we shall see, proved to be a blessing in disguise.
ثم بدا لهم من بعد ما رأوا الآيات ليسجننه حتى حين
Then it occurred to them to cast Joseph, peace be upon him, into prison for a while, even though they had seen clear signs of Joseph's innocence and of the evil ways of their ladies. Even though they had seen clear signs of Joseph's innocence and of the evil ways of their ladies. The imprisonment of Joseph under such circumstances amounted, on the one hand, to his moral victory. On the other hand, it amounted to the defeat of the Egyptian elite. Joseph, peace be upon him, was now no longer an unknown person. Everyone in the capital had now become familiar with his name. Most of the ladies of the Egyptian upper class had fallen for him. The ruling classes grasped the gravity of the problem posed by Joseph's overwhelming attractiveness, a problem which menaced their family lives. They thought it prudent that such a person be put behind bars. Obviously, a person who was so extraordinarily attractive could not have remained unknown to others. It was natural that he would have become the talk of the day in every household. People would also have to come to know that Joseph, peace be upon him, was not just a physically attractive youth. He was also possessed of nobility, firmness of character, and elegance of behavior. People would also have become aware that Joseph, peace be upon him, had not been imprisoned because he was a criminal. They fully knew that it was easier for the ruling classes to consign Joseph, peace be upon him, despite his innocence, to suffer imprisonment than to keep their women within the bounds of decent behavior. It is for this reason that they afterwards decided to consign him to prison. This also shows that sending innocent persons to prison in disregard of the due process of justice and without caring to establish their guilt or innocence is one of the accepted practices of rulers from olden days. In this regard, the evil forces of today are no better than those of 4,000 years ago. The only difference, perhaps, is that the rulers in those days did not pay lip service to democracy, while the rulers of today never tire of that. Even today, they indulge in acts of lawlessness to achieve their ends. Whenever they are in need of a legal cover for their excesses, they know how to hammer out a piece of legislation geared to that end. The evil forces of that past committed wrongs against others in a clumsy manner. The evil forces of today also resort to excesses against others. However, when they do so, they try to convince others that the persons concerned posed a threat to the whole nation rather than just to them. The evil ones of the past were simply oppressors. The evil ones of today, in addition to being so, are also liars and devoid of all sense of shame.